I see that council are getting ready for the next argument. That's Town of Parker versus Triple M. And I will note that we do have copies of the deed of trust. Each of us does have a copy of that.
May I approve?
Yes, and you may begin.
Thank you. I am Joe Silver. I appear on behalf of the appellant's behalves. As your honors are aware, there are two grounds which are the subject of this appeal, what I refer to as the implementation ground, which is the determination that the 2008 easement implemented the 1992 service agreement and therefore was legislative action and not subject to the intervening 2004 deed of trust. And secondly, what I'm referring to is the subordination ground, which suggests that, in the words of the trial court, that subordination of the 2004 deed of trust occurred prior to any request, therefore, by the borrower of the appellants. With regard to the first, with regard to the implementation, it's bad law and it's bad policy. It's bad law because it is a foul of the Supreme Court's right holding in Rydell in applying a relationship back theory when none exists, when it's been already rejected in Colorado. And it's bad law because it props the 1992 service agreement up as a legislative action when it's clear to this court in prior decision and the Supreme Court that such private agreements, agreements between discrete individuals which lack the public policy, are not legislative actions. But the only thing new since the briefing with respect to legislative action is the Supreme Court case of San Antonio, Los Pinos, and Conejos River Acequia Preservation Association that is not final, subject to revision, but it's case number 10SA224, in which the court, akin to the prior holding cited in the briefs in the Verrier holding by this court. Verrier, by the way, said quasi-judicial actions involve a determination of rights of specific individuals. Legislative action, on the other hand, usually relates to public policy of a permanent or general nature and is not restricted, usually not restricted to an identifiable person or group.
Mr. Silva, let me just stop you for a moment. The case you just cited, was this cited in the briefs, or are you saying this was subsequent to the briefing?
The Verrier case, mm-hmm. which I just quoted, is a Colorado appellate case of 2003 that is in the briefs. It is the predicate to my referring your honors to the Supreme Court case, which was decided December 11th and does not appear in the briefs. And consistent with Verrier,
well, let me just stop you for one moment, because this was not referred to in the briefing. I would state that that if you would like time to file a letter to respond to anything that happens in the oral argument with regard to that case, we would accept a letter of just, say, 2 pages just responding to that case's applicability. Would that work? All right. Thank you.
And the case may not have much applicability. In reality, whether the 1992 service agreement, which was between the town, the property owner, and the water district, in which the parties agreed to cooperate in the future to develop a water system for this particular property, whether that's legislative action or not, tends to beg the question of whether the easement in 2008 can relate back to the 1992 service agreement. Because if it is legislative action, then the action by the legislative action is no more than a duty to confer, a duty to agree, a duty to cooperate.
So it's my understanding that even if it is a legislative action, what you're saying is unless it's conferring a property right,
That's right.
Then it...
Unless it's something more than the inchoate duty to cooperate. Because the court, let me address the dangling Acequia Preservation Association case. So here the Supreme Court, since our briefing, has said quasi-legislative actions are of general applicability and do not determine specific cases and controversies. It's not particularly dispositive of what's at issue here, other than the fact that the notion of legislative actions is something that has general application without regard to finite, discrete persons as the 1992. But to move to advance forward, even if this was legislative action in 1992, the Riddell case made clear that there is no relation back. The implementation, as the appellee argues, of the 1992 service agreement, the appellee argues that the easement is the implementation of the 1992 16-year prior service agreement. Well, implementation is the equivalent of this easement, now subsequent to the deed of trust, relates back to the prior agreement.
Let me ask you about using the term relating back, because my understanding in reading the district court order is that the district court stated that there was no relation back doctrine. So are you using the term relating back as far as the doctrine or as to the court's...
As to the court's actions. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Okay, well, as to its finding that the easement was an implementation
precisely.
Of the act.
Precisely. And it couldn't be an implementation because the effect of that implementation would be for an easement to, in effect, relate back to an inchoate right. In other words, in 1992, when there had been no determination as to what property the easement would lie upon, just that the property owner would go to the district and provide easements for a water and sewer system. The Riddell case said that until the way is located, no right-of-way can be said to attach to any particular land. As long as the power to locate the road remains unexerted, the lands upon which the exercise of the right-of-way ultimately casts the easement are uncertain, and no land can be designated as charged by the easement. So we have an intervening lender who secures in a purchase money deed of trust property prior to which there's an agreement in which the parties agree to cooperate to set easements to create a water and sewer system, including the creation of easements for that purpose, and without any co-ate designation, the Riddell case suggests not only that there is no ability to relate back, but that had the legislative action intended, they could have provided that the property be encumbered for that subsequent purpose, but it wasn't.
Pardon me, Mr. Silver.
Yes.
Perhaps I am cutting the bologna way too thick here, but isn't the real issue in this case whether your clients who purchased this property never had any way of knowing that this easement was going in on their land? Isn't that your argument?
Yes, except we weren't the purchaser of the property. We were the lender.
Well, okay, but you're the lender. You've got an interest in this land.
We are conveying an interest in the land in the form of a deed of trust and a power of sale.
Right, and you had no way of knowing that this property was nicked with this easement, right?
Couldn't have.
And isn't that your basic argument?
That is a basic component of the argument on the implementation ground. to suggest now that this subsequent easement somehow could have been disclosed by the inchoate 1992 agreement to cooperate towards the creation of the system doesn't give requisite notice.
And again, perhaps I'm slicing the bologna too thick, but isn't the next step of your argument, well, the government had ways that they could have let us know. There could have been eminent domain proceedings. There could have been a variety of different ways. But by not letting us know, they've hurt us and haven't given us an opportunity to protect our interest. Am I right or not?
You are right. And the reasons you're right may be beyond your question. Not only are you right because they could have done eminent domain, the agreement talked about servicing this property. The 24-inch line actually serves other properties, which would have been the compelling reason to exercise eminent domain. Moreover, this court, the Supreme Court's clear in the Cash National Bank case that says a person situated as are the appellants are entitled to the security that the entirety of their estate is going to be available for them, absent some basis on which there is a notice taking.
And so theoretically, if your clients knew that this was on, that this was in the works, your clients could have chosen to do a variety of things, which they didn't do, right?
And the legislative, yes, and the legislative action could have given us that notice in that agreement had it been something more than just an agreement to agree in the future. I move quickly to the subordination issue and what the clear error, and Your Honors, when I said backing up, when I said bad law and bad policy, it's bad law because of what we've focused on, and it's bad policy because we have these hidden liens. We have these unbeknownst liens that can arise because something might be tied to a building code or to a metro district obligation, so a tenant can undermine the landlord's lien or the lender's lien. The subrogation argument is the crux of which is that the decision of the judge reads out from the deed of trust the requirement that the easements that the borrower is able to do, is freely able to develop his property with, we don't contend, is read out the requirement that there be a request and the opportunity to join, which is mandatory, assuming conditions are met, was read out. And the problem is that these are not mere technicalities. We encumbered the portion of the property called what is in the briefs referred to as the Hess property. The unencumbered portion of the property is the Stroh Ranch, two ranches combined together. If there were easements that only were burdening the encumbered property and the unencumbered property, Stroh Ranch, was left unencumbered by these, there might be an opportunity for the lender to say, I won't join with you. And though it could be compelled to join, these aren't mere technicalities because the lenders could have an opportunity to sustain a burden of unreasonableness. Lenders signed a deed of trust in which they received the conveyance as the mortgagee, and that was put of record. Notice works both ways. They didn't say you couldn't encumber the property with easements. What they said is if you want those easements to be superior, if you want our deed of trust to be subordinate to those, you need to request as much, you need to give us notice of as much, and we will join you. Notice works both ways. Parker Water and Sanitation Act LE likewise had notice that if it wanted an easement superior to the deed of trust, it likewise could have assured that the lenders subordinated to that subsequent easement. I'd like to reserve a minute and a second if you're quick to.
May it please the court. My name is Murray Wiener, and my bar number is 14352.
Mr. Wiener, before you begin, I don't think I gave you any time limit to file your letter, so by the end of this week.
Thank you very much.
Okay, go ahead.
Let me tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to talk for about a minute about a couple factual matters because I want to put things in chronological order, especially in light of Judge Bernard's questions. Then I'm going to talk about the deed of trust. Then I'm going to circle back to the Bixby annexation issues. But I'd like to first just lay out a couple facts because I think if we talk in that context, it'll be easier to understand. First of all, the property, I brought Exhibit 1, which is in the binder, and I have no explanation for why the Douglas County Court didn't upload those documents. But in any event, the blue number 1 on Exhibit 1, and all the exhibits were admitted, not contested, and there's no disputed issues of fact that anybody's arguing. The Hess Ranch is the upper parcel, the Hess Ranch is the lower parcel, and the Stroh Ranch is the upper parcel. The water tank, the 5 million gallon water tank, is on the west side. The line runs from the water tank across open space, land that is to be dedicated to the town of Park and Open Space, and off into the other portions of the Parker Water and Sanitation District within the town of Parker. There are going to be planned for this Hess Ranch and Stroh Ranch, there were planned 5,566 residential units plus commercial units. The acreage is about 3,500 acres combined. The 5 million gallon tank that I talked about is in the highest spot on the property, as you might expect, and it was deeded prior to this 2004 deed of trust, the land for it. This is a 24-inch line, which is a very big water line, and again, all the land upon which this line sits is to be dedicated in open space under the 2003 plan and in the 2007 plan, which was later amended. And of course, the appellant has not appealed the rulings with respect to the town of Parker. And I'm here as counsel for the water district. Let me talk for a second about the 92 service agreement. I think we're turning annexation and land development completely on its head. You do not have to, a town doesn't have to annex real estate, and a town cannot annex real estate unless the owners agree consensually. The Kitty Hawk case made that clear, the Mid-Cities Town of Superior case made that clear. The 92 service agreement provides for water for both the Hess and Stroh Ranch, and no town in the state of Colorado is going to annex anything unless the developer is going to be providing for water. Section 2.3 says the parties agree to cooperate fully in all matters concerning the development of the water and the water system, including but not limited to securing the permits, implementation of augmentation plans, and acquisition of all rights of way and easements. So what happened later on, first in 84 and then Hess came in 03, they were folded into, these two pieces of land were folded into the Parker Water and Sanitation District. It wasn't an island, they were folded into an existing system, which is a loop system, which covers the town of Parker. The key document is the 2003 Replacement Annexation Agreement, Exhibit 14. At paragraph 3A of that document, it says the property owner will obtain water and sewer services for the property from the Parker Water and Sanitation District, pursuant to those separate agreements between the district and the property owner, which include, and then it lists four different documents, one of which is the 92 service agreement, which is cited by book and page and reception number. So the 92 service agreement is recorded. It's also made a legislative condition of the annexation agreement of 2003, the replacement annexation agreement.
But what does that mean, it's made a legislative condition?
The Bixby case, the statute itself, Title 31, allows that conditions be placed. It allows a town, a municipality, to impose conditions to annexation. And so Title 31 does it, and it was reaffirmed in the Bixby case that you can make a condition. It's a condition. You must do such and such. And in this case, the must do is you must provide water and sewer, and you must do so in accordance with these four listed agreements that are in Section 3A if we're going to annex your property. And so it's a legislative condition. The annexation agreement, the replacement annexation agreement, is a legislative act. And under Bixby, the Bixby case is very clear because in that case it was a PUD that was never even recorded about a parking lot. And it let this day school over here park in this building, in this next door lot, and it was never even recorded. You're on constructive notice when we have a legislative act. And these legislative conditions are within this very long replacement annexation agreement, Exhibit 14. There's lots of detail. I can give you another legislative condition in there that you'll know right away. The Chambers Road comes south from Denver or Arapahoe County and is going to go right down the middle of this property. There's no easement indicated in the replacement annexation agreement. But one of the things that has to happen is Chambers Road has to be built or dedicated The right-of-way has to be dedicated to the town, and then it has to be built. Under the theory of the appellant in this case, because the deed of trust came about in 2004, after 2003, somehow they could go ahead and foreclose out Chambers Road. And of course, the answer is no, they can't. This was a legislative condition in the replacement annexation agreement, of which they were they had constructive notice of number one. And of course, Judge Bernard, it was also recorded, and that's in the record in Exhibit 14.
Whose legislative action was it?
This is the town of Parker. So the town of Parker, Judge, in 92, the service agreements entered into between the town, the water district, and the then owners. But that's going to provide water to Shore Ranch, and if Hess Ranch is annexed, it will provide water to that too. But it's made, that agreement is made a legislative condition right in paragraph 3A of the replacement annexation agreement of 03. So it's right in there under 3A. I'd like to turn to the deed of trust, because I don't think you need to get to these big, broad municipal law type issues. You don't need to do that, in my judgment. Let me make a huge distinction. This is huge. Subordination and release are not the same things. That's the distinction. If you'll turn to page 6 and 7 of the deed of trust, so here's what happens. In the face of a 92 service agreement, in the face of a replacement annexation agreement, which brings the Hess Ranch in and the Stroll Ranch in to the town of Parker, there's a carryback note of $30 million on the lower parcel. And that carryback note has a deed of trust dated December 9th of 2004. And paragraph 9 of that deed of trust, you can call it, I'll call it a development carve-out. Because remember, the owner wants the property developed. The lender wants the property developed because its value will go up. The town wants the property developed because it's going to get tax revenues. The water district wants the property developed because it's going to get revenues from the sale of water and sewer. But Article 9 here, Section 9, is a carve-out for development. I like to call it a donut, and this is the hole. The deed of trust goes on the property, and the center, the hole, is Article 9, Section 9. How do we read Section 9? First, we note that it starts out by saying everything from the top down is without the consent of the lender. Then if we look at sections A, B, C, and D, all of those matters are land use matters, rezoning, subdividing, platting. All those things in A, B, C, and D are different than section E. They are land use matters. In other words, it says here that the owner of the property, what may they do? What they may do is they may turn around and they may rezone without the permission. They may subdivide, they may plat, all without the permission. Why? And these are not the kind of things that you bump with a deed of trust. In other words, if they're rezoned, we don't turn around and have a deed of trust come and knock it out. The reason is this. The deed of trust needed to stay on that property. If a portion of this massive acreage is rezoned to X, to commercial, the lender still needs his deed of trust on the property. Okay? And so therefore, his deed of trust stays on the property, but it's now as commercial as opposed to whatever it was before. Or it's now as platted. And he can still foreclose, and he gets the property under the new zoning, or he gets the property under the new platting. We don't bump those things. Then you need subordination. But 9E is different. 9E is for dedicating or conveying rights of way to governmental entities, or easements, or parcels of land for the fire station, it's even listed here. And those things we give to municipalities, and we do so because we want to be in compliance with the annexation agreement that came in 03. Let me give you an example, Chambers Road. Chambers Road had been placed in an annexation agreement. This document, Section 9, recognized that the owner of the property, without the consent of the lender, may dedicate these Chambers Road, the land for Chambers Road, he may do so to the town without the permission of the lender. And in order to read 9E correctly, we need to go to on page 7, the first sentence of that next paragraph. That sentence says, borrower shall take the actions, it says shall, describing 9E, only as and when required by governmental authorities with jurisdiction over the property, as a condition to the development and sale of the property or implementation of any action described in B, C, or D. Remember, B, C, and D are land use issues. So it says shall, and it says only when required.
It doesn't say only when required and when the lender agrees also. So we know that they have to follow this paragraph for 9E. And we also know that you don't subordinate to these things, you release. When the land goes for open space to the town of Parker, in accordance with 9E, the deed of trust doesn't get subordinated to it, it gets released. And you know the people who drafted this, they accommodated that too. If you skip on down to the second to last sentence in this section, it says, lender shall direct trustee in the manner provided in the last paragraph of section 11 to execute instruments releasing from this deed of trust any portions of the property that are dedicated or conveyed in accordance with section 9E, dedication parcels. So, the things that are dedicated or conveyed in 9E are dedication parcels. We have to comply with the first sentence on page 7. Borrower shall take those actions only as and when required. The as and when required was that Parker Water needed to put water lines in order to develop the property. And of course, the water lines go in before the houses go in and the buildings go in and the roads go in. And then the lender was supposed to direct the trustee to release. To sign instruments releasing the easement.
Mr. Weiner, let me stop you for a moment because we're skipping the sentence in between. Right. That lender shall join with borrower in the execution of. So when you're referring to that last sentence, would the lender only direct the trustee only if the lender has been involved in subordinating the lien?
Let me explain why the middle sentence isn't relevant here. Subordination, first of all, By the nature of the things we looked at, rezoning, subdividing, platting, and then these dedications, these types of matters, A, B, C, and D, need to be subordinated, but D needs to be released. So number one, we don't need to go to the middle sentence for that. The second thing is with respect to this sentence, this says, at when requested by the borrower, there are situations when the borrower will also like the lender's signature. My position is, and I think this is what the court was saying, is that it's automatic. This is a carve-out, it's the donut hole. But there are situations where the lender, the borrower, will need the lender's signature. And one example is that the town of Parker has an ordinance that says you can't plat any property in the town unless you get a lender's signature. So on top of that, they needed to put a sentence in here that says when the borrower or the owner requests it, they must sign subordination agreement. I mean, it's not any document they want. But the point I'm making is that under 9E, we don't need to deal with subordination. We deal with release. We release land for fire stations. We release land for police stations. We release land for open space. So that's, I believe, why the lender recognized, of course, improvements to the property, and the lender created this donut hole so that the owner of the property could proceed with orderly development of the property. I'd like to turn now to the Bixby discussion, which is what we've been talking about. The 92 service agreement provided for cooperation, and it became a legislative condition in the legislative enactment, the replacement annexation agreement. The Bixby case is right on point. Here's what happened in Bixby. Bixby is a Boulder case, and there was a PUD, Planned Urban Development. And the way that worked is one person or entity owned a chunk of land, and there was going to be a plan for a day school over here, and next to it was going to be something else. And the plan called for that the people on the day school could use the parking lot next door. And it was in a PUD, it was never recorded, and it was passed by the Boulder Planning Commission or whatever their proper names are. And then what happened after that is the land was subdivided.
Is Bixby the name of the case?
It's South Creek versus Bixby, I believe. I may have the first part of the name wrong, but Bixby, let me see.
Is that cited in your brief?
It is. South Creek versus Bixby, 781 P. 2nd, 1027. It may be the most important case in this context in terms of annexation. In any event, what happened in that case is that no easements were recorded. The PUD wasn't recorded. And the new owner of the parcel said, wait a minute, I don't want those people parking on my lot. I just bought this parcel, just like this lender says. And the court said, no. This is the Colorado Supreme Court. You have constructive notice because it was a legislative act. And the other thing is that he says, well, there are no easements. And they say, it doesn't matter. And this is what the Colorado Supreme Court said. Traditional rules of land conveyancing do not apply to the present case because the parking restrictions did not arise out of a private transaction. That's a quote. And so what we have here is we have a legislative acts,
going in. We have the orderly development of real property. I see my time is up. We have the orderly development of real property. We have a lender who takes knowing and renting for orderly development, and a lender who creates in their deed of trust a carve out so that orderly development may occur. Thank you. My time is up.
All right, Mr. Silver, you have 1 minute left.
The reason there is no donut hole is because the middle sentence includes, by its very terms, grants of easements described in Section 9E, which is what we're talking about. The Bixby case was not referred to in the briefs on appeal. It was relied upon before the trial court, and it's wholly distinguishable because by involving the PUC to be distinguished from the 1992 service agreement, the PUC had a public hearing and had notice, and it was a legislative action by virtue of the fact that it was not so contained to a discrete parties. And finally, the legislative act, even if there was one in this case that is being bootstrapped by the 2003 annexation, restated annexation agreement, was to cooperate fully. It wasn't with respect to any co-ate property interest.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you.
All right, thank you, counsel, for your excellent arguments. The case will stand submitted, and an opinion will issue in due course.